Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Tuesday, August 27th, 2013. My name is Sally Baptist. Thank you for tuning in tonight. Thank you for joining American Freedom Watch Radio, where our host is Karen Schoen and John Estabrook. And Karen and John have agreed to give me my entry rant to kind of get the show kicked off, and then I know they've got some guests, and I know we're going to have a very good discussion about Agenda 21 tonight, sustainable development. But before we go there, tonight I'm not going to rant quite as much as I did last week, even though I'll get a few good digs in there. When it comes to Obamacare and amnesty, does the GOP just look like they're too weak to get the job done? They do to me. And I keep pushing it out there that the GOP is DOA on Election Day if they pass amnesty or Obamacare. I just can't believe how weak the Republican Party is, especially with Mr. Priebus out there talking about stupidity of not of losing two elections and all this kind of stuff, losing two presidential elections. And I did send out an email during the week and talk about the stupidity of the Republican Party, and I gave some very specific examples. But the other thing when it comes to the Republican Party, and this is kind of the question I'm going to put out there for Karen and John to take off with and share their thoughts with me. Well, Ted Cruz is out there announcing that he wants to run for president and the issue of eligibility. I don't see how he's eligible in this situation, so I'm going to ask Karen and John about that. And then the other part that I just, as a Floridian who lives right here in Orlando, I find it somewhat humorous that they're having a defund Obamacare event right here in Orlando, and the key speaker is Ted Cruz. You almost don't even hear anything about Marco Rubio being at this event. He is going to be there. This is at Universal Studios at some resort there. But I just think it's funny that here in Orlando, they're pumping up Ted Cruz, and they're just ignoring good old Marco Rubio. I think I know why, but I just find it kind of humorous since Rubio is from Florida, and he has his main office right here in Orlando. So on that note, there is also the issue about the California nurses and the abortions, but we'll save that for later if you guys want to talk about it. I want your thoughts on the GOP being spineless and Ted Cruz being the keynote speaker here in Orlando.
Well, you know, first let me say welcome, everyone. You are listening to American Freedom Watch Radio, and we are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com. You're listening to your co-host Karen Schoen and John Estabrook, who today is on the soil, no sea legs necessary. Sally, to answer your question, Sally, I had a long talk with a friend that has spent quite a good deal of time in D.C. and was told this. When they come there, they hire consultants, and the consultants run everything. And the consultants that they hire are the GOP establishment who get their marching orders from Karl Rove, etc. They also keep in place their aides, which is a bigger problem because they rely on the aides to interpret. And we all know what happens when that happens because the majority of the aides are young, have recently gone through some form of school, which means they have been indoctrinated. And as a result, we have a crowd up in D.C. that has absolutely no idea what the Constitution is, what it stands for, and what's going on in the White House, and the power that they have, should they so choose to use it, because we are demanding it. See, that's the other thing. The people don't know the power that they have. So what we have right now is a bunch of little old people, and I'm one of them too, but people who can't grasp the fact that the old way is not the old, is not the new way, but the American way fits everything. So they feel that since they are great, wonderful, and terrific and should be the rulers of the universe, that we should give up everything to enjoy the crumbs of our labor as they steal the fruits of our labor. And this is what we have going on right now. It's very, very, very serious, and we are in a really bad position as far as those that are in the GOP. But as far as the people, it's us guys. We have the power. And as soon as we start engaging each other and talking and coming together, which is why we do these shows, to give you clues of how to do that, then it makes it easier for us to communicate and realize that we are still 70 to 80% of the country. And we don't have to listen to them. And that's been the saddest problem. John, I went to a meeting yesterday, and Chris Ann Hall was there, and she was speaking about the Constitution, which was fantastic, and I'll talk about that in a second. But at the end of her presentation, I realized the thing that we're all missing from all of these presentations is we should be asking, why do the people not know that? And then we would discover that America can't read, and as a result of America not being able to read, they have no idea what the Constitution is or any of the other documents, what they stand for, how they behave, and what they are about to lose. And that's the real issue, I believe. The Americans can't read, and we all know that when you can't read, you're forever a slave. So I think
Karen, to speak to what Sally was saying, I think Orlando is fortunate that they will get to hear and hopefully meet with Mr. Ted Cruz. I've met Ted. He is a constitutionalist. He has waged war in the Supreme Court on constitutional issues for the state of Texas and won his battles each and every time he has presented a case to the Supreme Court on constitutional merit. He's a wonderful American. I know his stance. He is not one of the folks that believes that there should be a blanket amnesty. He thinks that that's the wrong course of action, that protection of the borders should come first. Today I attended a town hall meeting with my congressman, Congressman Charles Bustani, and because there was a lack of attendance, I think there might have been 40 people at the max, and probably as few as 35. But as soon as the congressman entered the room, I was able I wanted to speak to him about what's fixing to take place in Syria and the mistake that we're fixing to make with foreign policy there, and also the amount of money that we'll spend taking those actions. But I was impressed. I have always met with Charles's staff in the past and have never had the opportunity to personally meet him. But in personally meeting him, and because of the size of the small size of the town hall meeting, I actually was able to get three of my questions answered. And the first one for me was, when you have a congressman, and if we'll look, you know, the Constitution says that for every 30,000 citizens, there should be one representative. Congressman Bustani, I ran my numbers before going to the town hall meeting, represents a population over 750,000 citizens in Louisiana. There is no way, with two staff offices, with a staff of six people inside the state of Louisiana, that he can ever functionally meet and understand his constituents. Many of his constituents, you speak well, Karen, to the fact that we're undereducated, and education is a failure. But we have these men that are representing 700 or, you know, hundreds of thousands of constituents that they can never functionally go and meet and find out what the issues are for them. And because that portion of our government is so dysfunctional, because these guys represent too many people, they can't functionally meet 750,000 constituents. There's no possible, feasible way for that to happen. The sad fact is that Charles Bustani was elected by 38% of the registered voters in his district. So the other people stayed at home, and that's a great concern for every American. Why are people, you know, many Americans have given up that government will ever function for them as, you know, the Constitution lays out. They have given up all hope that their vote matters, that their vote counts. They don't register to vote. They take little concern. You know, hey, we can't impact that, and that's a fact. So you've got a large majority. We may be 70% of the population that are conservatives, but if we're not functioning and we're not going out and taking actions and we're not performing together, then these guys win. You know,
Absolutely.
Yeah, I had the congressman, one of my questions to him, and I think this is a number that our listeners and every American needs to understand. You know, when we listen to mass media, number one, you're failing. So when you listen to mass media, and I include Fox into that, you know, and we hear this number spewed by our congressman, because prior to him digging in and getting my question, he had talked about the $15.7 trillion debt limit, you know, and the fact that they're going to have to deal with that by October. But there is a fact in my question to him, and I wanted him to explain to all the people that were present in the town hall meeting about the $124 trillion of unfunded liability. That's debt, folks. That is the debt. $124 trillion is a functional number, and then when you take every taxpayer in this nation today, every working taxpayer in this nation today has a liability for their portion of that debt of $1 million. Now, I don't know about you. I gave up working on my first million a while back and started on my second million in hopes that I might be able to do that. But when the government asked John for his $1 million as a worker and taxpayer, they're shafted. So there's a functional fact. We're broke.
The real problem is, John, that everything that they're doing is illegal. And until
it's been illegal, Karen.
It's
been illegal.
Yes, that's what I mean. Everything that they're doing is illegal. And until we get to the spot that we are strong enough in our states and in our local community to tell the feds to go take a hike, because what they have done is really flipped around the Constitution. The states gave a little bit of power to the federal government so that they would be handling contracts and commerce and national security and money, so that Florida didn't have different money from New Jersey and stuff like that. And that's really all they're supposed to have. People don't realize, I don't think, that when America was set up, each of those individual states were really sovereigns. They were countries, and they were equal and on par with France and with Germany and England and whoever else at that, and Spain and Portugal. And each one of those colonies was really a country, and the makeup of America was supposed to be like the makeup of Europe. Yes, they occupy the same geographic continent, but each individual was supposed to be an individual sovereign state. And as a sovereign state, they gave a little bit of power to the federal government. Well, that got flipped around in the early 1900s, thank you, Woodrow Wilson. And the people were never taught, and that's the problem. And all of this, again, goes back to the school. And if we really wanted to fix government and we really wanted to fix America, it would take 12 years, and all we would have to do is put America back in our schools. Because when you teach about America and people understand what it is, they'd never do anything like this. You got to be out of your mind. Why would you want
Karen,
to do everything?
I, see, I hold that education is a functional key, and it is part of the overall solution. But, you know, we operate, and that's where, you know, in 1921, and we have to go back to 1913 when they formed the Internal Revenue Service, the Federal Reserve Banking System.
Right, all of those illegal
the
operations.
IRS, who now we know is dysfunctional, but the fact is the IRS is not a U.S. government agency. It operates and it takes its marching orders from the International Monetary Fund. And who's the International Monetary Fund? And who are they aligned to? They're an agency of the United Nations. And that's a fact.
And right now, the United Nations is running the United States. And there's no nice
way
to put that. They
understand
own
that. They own
and
us.
And we have allowed that to happen. And we have, I believe we have one chance to get it back. And I am telling everybody, anywhere, if you give a presentation, if you speak, if you do anything, if you talk any place, run for office. We keep on giving them, and then we get mad when they don't do what we want. Stop giving. That's the only way to make any difference at all. There's things that we have to stop doing, and one of them is, stop putting people in office who are liars and can't follow the Constitution. Vet them properly. Run for office. And then make them accountable. We have a very bad habit. Exactly what you said, John. We give. Here, you do it for me. I don't want to pay attention to it. And that is something that was learned in school. And that's why I keep on going back to the school. Because every single behavior pattern is something that was learned in school. Every experience that we're having now is learned in school. These people didn't come here, whoever, you know, the IMF and the CFR and let's call them the global mafia. They didn't come here and by magic fairy dust spread all of this demise and deception and destruction on America. They put it in schools. And the minute they started doing that and filtering it in through the schools and made the American people, dumb and stupid, took the Constitution out of the school. You know what when a senator talks to me now and I say the Constitution and America and civics are not taught in school, you know what they answer me, John? They say, what do you mean, Karen? We have Constitution Day on the 17th of September. You got to be kidding.
Yeah, one day annually.
Kidding. One day
annually, and by law they have to allow us that. So
that's right.
That's written into the law.
And here's the other thing that I think was a major part of it, major. We allowed them to remove factual information from school, so facts are no longer necessary. And think about this. A fact is something that is concrete. It is a truth. It's like cement. It doesn't go anyplace. It doesn't go away. You can't unfact it. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, the sun is always going to rise in the east. It's not going to come up in the west one day. It's just not going to happen. And at 12 noon, the sun is always overhead. And at evening, the sun always sets in the west. And if you know that fact, you will never get lost. And when the facts are lost, people are lost. Because values maneuver. Values are opinions, and opinions change. And what's John's opinion today, and Sally's might be Sally's opinion tomorrow, but Karen might change it on Wednesday. What is a person supposed to learn? How can you learn when they're learning opinions? So the whole concept of education is the problem. And the only way that anything is going to get fixed is if we people run for office, America learns how to read, and we fix our educational system. Because with what we have right now, we are going no place fast. On a fast train going no place.
Well, we're actually, Karen, With the nationalization of the curriculum, we've actually taken huge steps backwards, and
exactly.
Now we are indoctrinating with the truest sense of the word. I mean, when we look at the definition of indoctrination,
that's what's taking place in our schools. If we go back to the Constitution, and those of us that actually know what it is, I like Mark Levin. I think it was great that he wrote a book, but he wrote a book about something that'll happen in the future. You can't do what he intends to do today. We need to work on things that we can do today. And right now, people in their own community, in their own county, have the right to say, I'm not doing that. You get out of my county. Now, is that going to give them an answer that they want? Not if they're alone and an individual, but if they were working with the rest of the people in their counties and their county sheriff. The federal government only exists because the people let it exist. And imagine if we were able to get the right people in our counties and the right people in our state, and then our state governor turned to the federal government and said, we are not paying you. We are not giving you income tax. We are not giving you any money. We will pay you per diem for the jobs that you were supposed to do as enumerated in the Constitution. And that's all.
Hey, Karen.
That's the reality of what we are supposed to do, because that's what the Constitution tells us to do. It doesn't tell us to give gazillions of dollars to people who are going to steal, because by doing that, we know they're going to steal. And guess what? They're stealing.
And on that note, two things. Excuse me. Two things. One, you talk about, you know, the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. And in the early morning and in the evening, I'm okay, but the rest of the time I can still get lost. And also, Neil is here.
You've got to visualize the clock. The sun is always runs in the clock position.
I know. Anyway, Neil is here.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Yes. Well, let's see.
Neil, are you there?
Yeah, I want to say something about Ted Cruz. I had read something, and I don't know what the heck it was supposed to mean, but supposedly he has given up his Canadian citizenship. Hello, what does that mean?
Okay. It is not unusual for people who are either A, in the military, or B, have offspring, have children while they are in the military.
Right.
And Ted Cruz's father, when Ted was born, unlike Marco Rubio, when Ted was born, his father was an American citizen. His mother is an American citizen. He was born in Canada when his father was serving. I believe he was in one of the branches of service. So he was serving for America. When he's born in that country, in Canada, he got Canadian citizenship, which made him a dual citizen. People in Panama, that if you go to Panama because of the relationship that America has with Panama, you have dual citizenship. But to be president, you can only be a citizen of one country. So he gave up.
And you have to renounce. You have to renounce the other citizenship.
So in other words, he is eligible now.
Yes, he would have been eligible. The only thing the requirement is that you must renounce the citizenship that you choose. But when you're dual citizens, and I work with a lot of guys offshore that are international guys, and because they're families, and just like Karen said, and that's a great explanation, in military service, whether you're an American in service or a British soldier in service, wherever your children are born, I've got a friend of mine that he has dual citizenship in South Africa, and necessary for him to be able to hold office in Britain, he had to renounce his South African citizenship. You know, you had to turn in the passport, and it's lovely for those guys with dual citizenship. Sometimes America may have a policy where you can't enter into a country, but the Canadians are cool with it. So if you have dual citizenship, you can carry two passports, and you can use that, and some of them do. You know, so, but Ted is legally an American, and he could run and could seek the presidential office. And I would have no issue. I mean, I know the guy's background in his history. Like I said, you know, having had the pleasure to meeting, and I guess we spent about an hour and a half together in a casual setting. And I was so impressed, and this was prior to him even running for senator. He hadn't even he had thought about maybe Congress. But when he made his run for Senate, you know, the RNC, and that's another thing. He knows what the National Republican Committee is all about, because they actually financed another candidate in Texas and worked very hard so that Ted Cruz would not get elected. And that was one of the great, you know, last things that we accomplished in the last election, was that the patriotic movement, the Tea Party movement in Texas, was able to elect Ted Cruz, a constitutional citizen. And I think when you get the opportunity, if you have the opportunity to meet him and to listen to him, you're gonna find out he is one of the fixes for this nation.
Yep. And unfortunately, what we do need is more Ted Cruz's.
Yeah.
See, if people would have done their due diligence, which now we know they can't, so we have to do that for them. So what we have to do now is expose the candidates, because if people would have realized what Marco Rubio was all about, it would have been a different tune. And if you remember back to the 2012 election, we were also told at that time that Connie Mack was going to be our candidate. And we had several other candidates that were really, really good and would have done a fabulous job. But no, we were told that Connie Mack was going to be the candidate. So we have to stop being told and stop paying attention to anybody in any party. I refuse to even look at a party. And now I don't even ask the people what party they're in. I don't care. It's unimportant. It's the person. And that's the real issue. Who are the people? What have they said in their past? Are they saying the same thing? And I don't have a problem either if a person had an opinion a couple of years ago and then realized that it was wrong and changed it. I don't have a problem with that. I understand that, because things do change. You do make a decision at one time and then change it into something else based on new information. How many people believed in global warming and now with new information realize it's cold? That's okay, because you want to be able to do that. But then we go back to the original premise again, or the original thesis. If facts are not known and nobody can grasp their hands on the facts, then there's no truth. And then we go back to, there is no reality except what is provided by the government. And that's what we're living with right now. We're living with people who believe that the government is doing the right thing by them, because that's what they were told. And the only way to change that is what doing things that we're doing and running for office and getting out there and talking to people, because people are concerned. They're upset. It's beyond being concerned. People are upset, and they are so thirsty for leaders, because there aren't any.
Okay.
And every time we go out and say, yes, this guy could be one, well, then you realize, no, he's not. But at least we're getting him earlier, which is always a good thing.
Okay,
yeah.
We have a caller who seems to want to jump in here, if you guys got time before your other guest gets on here.
Okay,
yeah.
We'll make it quick. Who is there?
Oh, okay, the caller, last four digits, 9144, you're on the air.
This is Roy Callahan. It's
well,
nice to meet
anyway.
You, Sharon.
You?
I'm
Welcome
glad Neil
to
is
show.
On, too. This is beautiful. I agree with everything that you said. In fact, it's interesting that I just got a letter from Ted Cruz tonight. He's been sitting up in Washington, didn't have time to write to me, but I got it tonight. It's on the Second Amendment. Bless his heart that he didn't forget me. I agree with what you're saying about Ted Cruz and his eligibility for the presidency. John McCain is one of the people that sticks out in terms of Panama Canal. His dad was stationed down there, and he was born down there. That had nothing to do with his citizenship. If you go back to the election, you couldn't probably remember that the Democrats tried to make an issue out of that. It didn't work.
Right.
But, and of course, everybody forgot about Barack Obama, and his dad was never an American citizen, so he's ineligible to hold the office that he holds. With regard to education, you are absolutely right. My representative, Keith Perry, and I had discussed education for quite a long time, and he made the mistake of telling me, well, Roy, if you want to change something, show it to me on paper. So what I did was I researched the Florida Statute 1003.42, and not only did I rewrite the statute, but I also wrote a working paper delineating the reasons for the changes in the statute. When you talk about what they're teaching kids in school, what really stuck out in my mind was the Frankfurt School on Mine.
Yes.
It came to our country just before World War II. People like Ramisi and that whole cast of characters have had a tremendous effect. Yeah.
All those wonderful people.
Yeah, what really sucks about it all is Columbia University helped them all get started. I mean,
well, you're absolutely right. But here's something that Neil brought to my attention, and I am doing this now with everybody. Before anybody asks me if I have an opinion, I now go to the Aspen School, which is the offshoot or the offspring of the Frankfurt School. And for those of you that don't know, all of the psychologists, the Nazi psychologists, as they fled Germany, they came here. And through what was called Operation Paperclip, our FBI changed their biographies and made them into upstanding American citizens. And they went into our fine universities and into NASA and continued what they had been doing in Germany. So they didn't change anything. They didn't change themselves. And they began to do a series of experiments using the philosophies that they had learned in the psychological analysis and experimentation that were done in the Frankfurt School. Only today the school is called the Aspen Institute. Mm-hmm. And before you go and accept any candidate or any person, check to see the roster of the Aspen Institute and see if they've been there. Because if they have, then you know right off the bat that, number one, they're going to lie because that's what they learn there. Remember, you can be deceitful. It's okay. As long as the ends justify the means, that's all right.
Well,
so,
I was a babe in arms in that sense, and it was Neil Rice that actually put me onto the Aspen Institute. He just cleared up the other part that you didn't tell me. I didn't realize that the Frankfurt School on Main in this country morphed into the Aspen Institute. Thank you very much for that piece of information.
Okay, no problem.
Beautiful.
That is where all of this is going. And if we take a look at the demographics just of Florida, Marco Rubio is a graduate of the Aspen Institute. Well, what did he learn there? Well, there they learn New World Order, globalism, because the school is run by the global mafia. And in this, they do not believe in borders. And they are trying to create the North American Union, just like the European Union.
Yep.
And they're going to combine Canada, America, and Mexico. And the first way that they're going to do that is, drum roll please, Miss Neal, how are they going to do that?
Through the smart grid bill.
Exactly. They're going to make an electric after a grid. Now, think about this, folks. What are we being told? We can't have coal. We can't have oil to fuel our electricity. And here they are making an electric grid that's going to be run by question mark. How are they going to man this thing? How are they going to ignite it when they can't use oil and they can't use coal? So the whole thing is just incredibly stupid. But the concept is not, and their concept is that there is no America. America will be merged with Mexico and Canada, mm-hmm. and it will be the North Atlantic Union. And the beginning of this came from the NAFTA trade agreement, which, by the way, was written by the Heritage Foundation.
Thank you.
So I want everybody to understand where all this is coming from. This is not good people. And the Heritage Foundation promotes the trade agreements which promote the demise of America's borders and illegal immigration. So all these big guys, stop giving money. Stop. Pay attention to where you donate before you donate. And pick a person and donate to the people and not a party or a group or an organization until you fully understand who they are and are in agreement with what they say. Otherwise, you'll be in for a big surprise when you find out that the NAFTA was written by the Heritage Foundation. So as on the one hand they were telling you how everybody should have a house, they were selling you down the river as they were taking your jobs away. What did we think was going to happen from that? Picture that scenario. Well, that's exactly what happened. The economy crashed and the middle class suffered because that's what this whole thing was all geared at.
Karen,
yes.
Looks like Michael Shaw is here, and I'll let you go
Michael
ahead and give
Shaw
the formal introduction.
Michael, join us. Michael Shaw, we have a big full house today, but everybody is real happy that you are here. Michael Shaw is from Freedom Advocates, and he is from the, forgive me for saying this, the Communist Republic of California, but they are the ones that started it. Actually, they didn't. It started in Minnesota, which was even worse. But Michael has been fighting this fight for a very long time, but today we're talking more about solutions and what can we do, because we can't keep on being Chicken Little and saying, you know, there's a hole, there's a fire, there's a hole in the dam, there's a, you know, there's a problem, there's a problem, there's a problem, without coming up and saying, what can we do and what could be a solution? So thank you for joining us tonight, Michael.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you again, Karen, and I'll look forward to the challenge you've just issued.
Michael, you are on the show tonight with our co-host, John Estabrooks, and we are happy to have Neil Rice with us, who has done a tremendous amount of work on smart grids and has done a tremendous job on figuring them out, finding them out, and pulling them out. But if you could tell everyone your websites, where to find you, I posted lots of your videos. So important, folks. It's so important. So, thank you.
Well, the Freedom Advocates, we're based in Santa Cruz County, California. You know, the reason that Freedom Advocates has existed so long and has been so intense on this study is because Santa Cruz was used as a prototype for the Agenda 21 program here in the United States. There were several communities that were picked out for this in Santa Cruz. It goes back as far as the 1970s, I mean, well before Agenda 21 was even announced to the world at the UN conference. But Santa Cruz was well vested. The things that the rest of California is experiencing now, and in fact the rest of the country is experiencing now, are circumstances that Santa Cruz has been looking at for a long time. So when we came to the realization that the policies here were reflective of this international program called Agenda 21, back in the year 2000, we We began Freedom Advocates then and have been working nonstop since then to begin to give the American people and really people around the world a good view with good solid information about the nature and workings of Agenda 21. And so today you can go to that website and you've got a deep trove of information that's really predictive or has been predictive of what everybody's experiencing now, because the entire program of Agenda 21 has been in operation here for a long time. And so we've been able to get that word out. It has helped a lot of communities stymie the Agenda 21 program. No one has won against it at this point because it's a monster that just doesn't die. You got to kill it again and again and again. And, that's what we aim to do.
That's funny because before I was talking to Sally and she said, "How are you?" And I said, "I feel like I'm one of those blow-up dolls, you know, with the sand on the bottom that you keep on punching and it comes back. So I get punched with Benghazi and then you come back. And then you get punched with the IRS and then you come back. And now we're punched with Common Core and the 750 plan and the ocean's rising." And it doesn't stop. You're right, Michael. There's just so many places we have to pay attention to. But you know what I did learn? The good news is that they do all of these programs the same way.
Oh, that's for sure. That's for sure. I mean, you have different NGOs involved in town from town, but they're all doing the same thing. And as we discussed at our show in July, they work according to a program and a plan for localizing Agenda 21 in every local community in America. The federal government is behind this. Every state government is behind it, state agencies, federal agencies, et cetera. And so when they roll out their land use plan, they all look the same. They might have different titles. It might be, as it is here in Santa Cruz, it's called Local Agenda 21, or it might be a Blue Ways program for rural rivered areas, or it might be your 750 plan in Florida, or the One Bay Area plan for the San Francisco Bay Area. But when you boil it down, it's all the same. It's about stacking and packing human beings and taking us and our resource providers out of what's called the wildlands, over 50% of America, and leaving that to nature. And, of course, that's all driven by the objective of Agenda 21 of reducing human population. And so that just is a thumbnail of why it is that every American needs to pay attention to this dynamic and understand it. We can't beat an enemy we don't understand. And this is an enemy. This is a war that's fought without guns, but it's fought on a basis and at a sophistication level the likes of which the world has never seen. If we lose this war, we, our children, and our posterity will become chattel of a new ruling elite,
yep,
unprotected by the notions of natural law and the ideals that were set out for the world in the 1700s through the establishment of America. We truly stand on a teetering edge right now as we ready ourselves to fall off into this one-world government abyss. And,
I want to interrupt just a second because I would offer to you, and I'm offering you based on fact, we have one-world government. We have one-world law. And we have a one-world monetary system, and that's in place. So what you and I and Karen, Neil, every one of us are in a battle for restoration,
mm-hmm,
because this we have not operated as the United States of America since 1921, and that's a fact. Once we gave up our U.S. Treasury, we are owned by the United Nations. Make no mistake about that. They have financed everything in this government for the last 50 years. And that's a fact. And when they choose to, at their whim, if they choose to disallow any more U.S. dollars, then this nation will economically collapse. You know, you don't own any property because slaves can't own property, and we are slaves to a one-world government. You know, when I read, you pull up your deed and you look at the deed to your property and you think, man, you know, hey, I've worked hard and I've paid my mortgage and I finally own this property. And then when you read the legal document and you're just a tenant. And that's a fact. And it's because you, we as citizens are nothing but, I guess we're just collateral waste for these folks. And that's what Agenda 21, you know, as human capital, one of the tenets of Agenda 21 is to shed us, to get rid of a large portion of us. So we're in a battle for restoration. We can't stop what has already taken place. The sellout of America is completed. It's done. All we're watching is the complete economic destruction of the entity, the corporation.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with what you said, but I think there is one important element that's left out in that analysis, and that is this. The globalists have control of the global political economic environment through the UN, through the Bank of International Settlements, through the World Trade Association, and through the international banking cartel. There's no question about that. But the globalists themselves recognize that to really effect a one-world government and to really have centralized global control in the hands of what you called the global mafia, they have to take over local circumstances. The thing they don't have control of is your local city council. Now, there are programs, and that's what we're going to talk about, what we did talk about the last time. There are programs coming from the federal government that are directing your local officials to succumb to the world government dynamic. And the greatest focus of the internationalists today is over the concept of regionalizing your local community.
Yep.
And so there we're not working necessarily to restore anything. We're working to maintain local control, because if we maintain local control from the globalist assault arranged through the process of regionalism, then we have a base to begin to dismantle all of the problems that you've mentioned. We cannot go to Washington, D.C. today and cause Congress to pull out of the World Trade Organization or to pull out of the World Bank. Those people are bought, paid for, and sold out. We have no chance of affecting Democrat or Republican elections at levels like Congress, President, and the U.S. Senate. But we do have control over who we put at our city councils and at our county commissioners or board of supervisors. And that is our last road before they really have us packaged and baked. And so what I like to focus on is how it is we can stave off Agenda 21 at the local level as we then begin the peel back, beginning at state level and then on to the federal level of this Agenda 21 assault upon ourselves.
Okay, and Michael, I mean, you're absolutely right, but that is a restoration process, and that's the only thing, I mean, that I believe.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with that word.
We have to do it on the county, the parish level, in our communities, and that is the only hope, is that we take full accountability and we say the federal government has failed us. The federal government is working totally lockstep and is lost. And for the only possibility for American citizens is that we do restore and establish sound constitutional local governments. That's what has to happen.
Well, that's right, and I think what we're going to find out in that process, and this is probably jumping way ahead, but it fits right here, and that is that there's going to be a number of locales that begin a process of seceding from the United States. And that's not for the purpose of abandoning the American experiment. It's for the purpose of continuing the American experiment with a great hope that the American landscape can be reunified someday, but that can't happen until we have recaptured Washington, D.C., and that's not going to happen this decade.
No, I don't think so either.
Okay.
I agree.
Now, Karen, you had asked me to give sort of a synopsis.
Yes.
Of the Agenda 21 discussion that we had, maybe 6 weeks ago. And so I'll do that so that we can kind of launch from there and expand that discussion to subjects
right.
that
we
maybe were not
we
covered.
Right, we have some new listeners. We are very, very pleased to also announce that we are part of Red State Talk Radio. And, excuse me, actually we'll take a short station break, which is, welcome everyone, you're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. This is Karen Schoen with my co-host, John Estabrooks, and our guest, Michael Shaw. You are listening on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on Red State Talk Radio. Please visit our websites, agenda21today.com, americaismyname.com, and Karen Schoen for a very opinionated column.com. Doesn't know, it's just KarenSchoen.com.
And Karen, we're doing so well. Isn't that a well? We took a break on time. Gosh.
See what Primo's happens when you know proud. How to read the clock. Another thing not taught in school.
There you go.
Well, for your listeners that were that have heard that earlier interview, this would be a recap. But let me give a short summary so that those who did not hear or who were not particularly familiar with Agenda 21 get a very broad brush view of what it is our discussion is really all about. First, I'd have to say that the highlight, and we've already touched on it a bit here today, the highlight of that first interview was the discussion regarding regionalism. You know, most Americans, think of regional Little League sponsorship and, regional associations of this civil or organization or that one. But regionalism as a political concept is a very important thing to understand. Regionalism is taking a geographic area, usually bounded by mountains or rivers or other natural phenomenon, and reestablishing a political system based upon this general geographic area that does not have political boundaries. Regionalism is the prototypical system of government for a Sovietized system. And what I mean by a Sovietized system is that it's a system of councils that all report back to an apex council. Ultimately, in the context of regionalism, the ultimate apex council is the federal agencies, and on top of them, it's the United Nations. And so what we have in America is a system developed of regional councils, regional governments, that are now exercising their full muscle power as they ride in and attempt to overrule and is actually eliminate city and county governments so that our government and our lifestyle, our land use patterns are all determined by these central agencies that take directions from above, who are not elected, who are not accountable to the citizens, and who are reshaping, reinventing, if you will, as Al Gore said, reinventing our system of government. Now, this is where our focal point needs to be as we move forward in the restoration of the American concepts, because we cannot live an American lifestyle if we have an overriding, localized political system that is based on Soviet concepts. So regionalism and their operating body called COGS, or Councils of Government, have been set up. They've been in existence for a long time. They cover virtually every square inch in America. And it is the regionalist COGS that we need to understand if we are to begin to fight the transformation of local government as all things local become Agenda 21-ized. Now, we also had a fairly detailed analysis of Agenda 21. We talked about where it came from. We talked about the global to local effort that is the centerpiece of Agenda 21. In terms of what they seek to accomplish by localizing these policies. We talked about how world government is to be structured under the Agenda 21 protocol, and we focused on the action strategy that is inherent to Agenda 21, including the goals of Agenda 21, which just in short are to abolish private property, to create an educational system that rears global citizens, not American citizens,
common goal,
and a system of monitoring and controlling of all human action, so that everybody, you know, becomes a cog in the chain. And that's, you know, that's the reason for the smart grid. The smart grid gives them ability to cut you in or out of society, and to monitor how much of everything you use, where you use it, when you use it, and the ultimate plan will be, if you ain't a good citizen who's willing to do what he's told, you'll simply be cut off of these essential services. And so the smart grid is something to be very concerned about, because it really fulfills the third objective of Agenda 21, which is to monitor and control all human action. So we ended our discussion with a brief description of the international NGO, that's non-governmental organization. They exist for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. We talked about the international NGO called ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. Now, ICLEI has contracts across America with 600 cities and counties. And what ICLEI does when it has a contract with your city is that it begins to conform your city policies to climate change rules, and the effect of all of that is to do the Agenda 21 objectives. ICLEI wrote the local Agenda 21 planning guide back in 1993, right after the UN released its Agenda 21 program. So ICLEI, you know, which is based in Bonn, Germany, has offices on every continent in the world. Its objective is to create a new form of the United Nations, really a transformed form of the United Nations, called the United Cities of the World. And if we look around the world today, we find all kinds of cities, including the 600 that I mentioned earlier coming from the United States, who actually participate in an international congress. It is a shadow world government in operation already today, and your mayor may be responsible for your town being a participant in that. Well, if that doesn't make you mad, nothing else will.
Yeah. You know, you really hit on something which I don't think the people are realizing, how they're being maneuvered by localizing.
Well, you know, it was Pat Brown, Jerry Brown's brother, who was governor of California in the 1960s, Jerry Brown's father, I'm sorry, who said that all politics are local.
Right.
And, you know, the globalists know that. And while they've got their globalist infrastructure in place, and the federal government is compliant with that global structure, as Congress gives away its trade policy to the World Trade Organization, and as our monetary policy is given over by the Department of Treasury to the IMF
and
all the rest of the international organizations.
That's
right. But even the internationalists know that all politics begin at the local level, and so what they have to do is gain control of local governments so that the people can be planned.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the position we're in today. So
yeah,
what
I
want to do...
I guess the fact is, Michael, that these planners and these vision plans and smart growth and all of the fantastic names that are, you know, 25-year plan, 30-year plan, 50-year plans, they exist in every county in this nation. That's where your root is. Every county in this nation has a planner that is being guided into, and these are not evil people on your local level. I mean, the parish planner where I live, she's not an evil lady, but she is misguided, and she's fallen into the trap because they're, you know, everything that my parish does requires that they go back to the federal government, since they're the taxing authority, and they take our money up to Washington, and they dole it out through grants back to the local governments with an attachment. Everything these planners are doing has an attachment. When they take a grant, you better be very cautious and make them look at what's attached and what's going to take place in your community when they take these grants.
Well, the grant mechanism ties back into the regionalist concept in COG, Councils of Government, because your local government receives its money largely through these COGs. Now, to discuss COGs a bit more, let's understand their history. COGs came into existence in America in the 1950s. They were a Dwight Eisenhower proposal, and Eisenhower brought them into the country in order to create the federal highway system. Well, that sounded innocuous to most people. Most people didn't think a federal highway system amounted to the Sovietization of America.
Right.
But today, COGs, which are voluntary associations, your city does not have to belong to its COG. But if your city does not belong to the COG, your city gets no federal funds, period. So every city virtually in America belongs to a COG. But now that they belong to the COG, when they take the COG's money, they've got to do what the COG tells them to do. That's why transportation funds today are mostly for bicycle paths,
right,
and for mass transit propositions. And there's no money for highway widening or highway construction, because under the Agenda 21 protocol, we're to get out of our cars. And so it's the COG that brings that home to you where it is you live. You don't even know who your COG is. You don't even know what your COG does. It is the secret government that has been established in America for a long time, and now it is in full roar.
Yes.
Right. Absolutely right.
So what does that mean? That means we got to get rid of the COG. So let's talk a little bit more about COGs. You know, how do they constitute themselves? Well, this is interesting, because they've used this for decades to cover up the nature of this Soviet-style government, because the COG is made up of elected officials, not elected to be members of COGs, but they're city council people, they're county commissioner people, who get appointed. You know, you got to be of the right political persuasion to be an elected city council person and
Michael,
get appointed to the
COG. May I stop you for a moment?
Sure.
May I ask everybody to please mute your phone except for John and myself? And then if you want to say something, just unmute them, because we're getting some background noise, and I think I don't want it to filter through. Thank you all. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, the issue with these COGs is that Councilman X from the city next to you gets placed on the COG, and the county commissioner from your county gets placed on the COG. These people are all pre-screened to be suitable globalist advocates. And so they go to the COG, and they make these policies, which are barely reported on by newspapers,
right,
barely acknowledged by the politicians who are not sitting on the COG. Everybody just goes along and does what the COG tells them to do. And so the cities accept the money, which conditions the money on the transportation funds going to rapid transit, buses, or bike lanes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also gives the money necessary for the kind of housing that you're going to find in your community. And the only housing that is approved by the COG are these stack and pack units, the smart growth element of Agenda 21. And so it is the COGs from behind the scenes and out from newspaper coverage that are controlling your city councils, that are controlling your county boards of supervisors. And as long as that continues, well, gee, you might as well be living in Cuba.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are scratching your head about Michael talking about in the 50s with Eisenhower, let's remember and do our due diligence. Milton Eisenhower, Ike's brother, was a card-carrying communist. And Eisenhower sent a commission to Russia to study the Russian city-state, which is what these are modeled after.
Well, that's right, and I can add to that. I mean, this is not a leftist takeover of America. You know,
no,
it is a right-left synthesis that is taking over America, because here in California, the man who brought these voluntary, quote-unquote, associations to this state was Governor Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who said when he brought them here, he said, the era of horse and buggy government in California is over. And by that he meant we're wiping out our city and county the system, and we're replacing it with cogs.
Yep, you will conform.
Yes.
And Reagan was also the one that got in office, let us remember, by saying, everyone, I will eliminate the Department of Education.
Yes. And when he left, it was the
largest
governmental organization in the world.
Yes. And now today, this is where all of this has evolved from. And it starts local, and that's why I've been telling everyone, Michael, run for office. People have to run for office. You have to pay attention. And you will find that if you go to these meetings and you present yourself with factual information, your county will have a better shot of listening to you if you're prepared. And maybe you should talk about that too, because you've been to a lot more county meetings than I have. So what would be some good tips for people to go to these meetings?
Well, I think the first tip, you know, it's pretty basic. It's a boring tip, but you can't fight a war when you don't know the enemy. I mean, Sun Tzu said that thousands of years ago.
Yes.
The first element
yes.
is you've got to know what you're fighting or you can't fight it, because the average American gets elected to office and thinks he's going to be a good red-blooded American, but he doesn't understand regionalism. He doesn't understand Agenda 21, and he gets co-opted in the first day.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's that easy.
So we have to know your enemy.
You got to know your enemy, and that means you have
know
to
their
understand
plan.
Agenda 21. Yeah. If you
and
know
they
it's
made
Agenda
it
21,
easy because they gave us their plan.
Yes, it's all in writing, and it's their writing, and all you need to do is superimpose that over what's happening in your community. And our efforts at Freedom Advocates are to show people the stereotypical ways that these policies are introduced into one's hometown. I did a two-year series called The Ultimate War, Globalism versus America, where I went to about 20 places around the country, and we independently researched each of those communities and showed how the Agenda 21 portfolio is rolling out in those communities. I always said I could go anywhere in America and do the same thing. But the point is that if that were studied, and we hope to create a study model for it, if that were that analysis were studied, we see all these towns doing virtually the same thing, always with, you know, different NGOs running it, different politicians running it, but the common thread were COGS, Councils
mm-hmm.
of Government, the regional government operating in America, and the Agenda 21 protocol, always talking
right.
in terms of the three E's and mm-hmm. always talking about, you know, social equity and that kind of thing. And those are your tip-ins. Those are where you've got to go in, dig down, find out what it's about, who's responsible, and expose it.
Yes.
So don't
Michael, why don't you go ahead? This, I think, you know, when you mentioned Freedom Advocate, why don't you go ahead and share with the listeners your web pages and how they can get this information and how they can gain your knowledge?
Well, it's simple enough to get there. It's freedomadvocates.org, and you know, you can spend
Eight.
The next month in study. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
It's 13
Absolutely.
Years of very carefully selected information, some of which we generated ourselves, others of which we took from contributors from around the country and really around the world. because this is a worldwide movement.
Yes.
It is a one-world government dynamic.
Yep.
And, you know, you spend time at Freedom Advocates, and, you know, we've got 1,000 hours of audio, and we've got many hours of video that we produced and other videos that give one insight as to how this is happening. And our real bread and butter is just the articles, you know, beginning
right.
in the year 2001.
Yep.
And everything we said then is still posted now and still relevant today. Because you've got to
right.
remember that our focus was from the Santa Cruz perspective. And, you know, this place was considered a political laughingstock until now. You go over to San Jose and around the Bay Area and up to San Francisco, and you look at Seattle and you look at Los Angeles and you look at Tijuana and, you know, you look at Florida and you look anywhere you want to look, and everybody's doing the same thing Santa Cruz has been doing for a long time. And that means that if you're living out in the rural areas, you're under pressure.
Oh, you bet.
Yes. And
you
it means
bet.
That if you're living in town, you're seeing the stack and pack come in all around you. And
right.
Much of the stack and pack is being built without garages and without parking
yep.
spaces.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They put in a rule in some of the rural counties we're discovering with, we want to help the farmers. We're going to have a farmer's market on Thursday from 8 to 10. There's no parking. So what does the farmer do when he picks his vegetables on Monday?
Yeah.
And then they made it so, and this, by the way, is in the Food Safety Act that all of our wonderful legislators signed, which means that the government gets to regulate all food if they claim that there is a safety hazard. So those little farm stands that could be sold to the public could create a massive hazard, so they have to have fees and be inspected and blah, 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 blah.
Well, and yet we take food imports from China,
yes.
which don't meet our basic production standards, and,
yes.
You know, oftentimes you don't
well,
know what you're
now,
eating, including
the
GMO products that they're producing
yep.
there.
That's
yeah.
a good thing for people to do. Stop taking food from overseas. You don't have to.
Well, but the dynamic there is that with the Wildlands Project, the focus, the thrust of governmental policy is such that our food production is dropping, and it's going to continue to drop. You know, with the geoengineering of our weather, we're finding a lot of crop failures, and with the political dynamic in places like the Central Valley of California, America's breadbasket, you know, is now going fallow because
yep.
the policies are being implemented that force these farmers out of business.
What?
You say,
what
why would
they
do that?
Michael, what did they grow there?
Oh.
Everything, Ken.
Yeah, everything.
I mean, they were the
vegetables.
All your
vegetables.
Let me rephrase that. Were they growing vegetables or row crops?
Mostly vegetables. But, you know, when you say row crops, I mean, you know, corn is a row crop.
Right.
Raspberries
right.
are a row crop. They also grow, fruit on trees and nuts on trees.
Right. Okay.
And, I mean, this is just... This was just always America's food. I mean, everything comes from California. I know you have a lot of oranges in Florida. You know, we have a lot of oranges here. You know, but boy, everything
well,
is grown in California.
I mean, when I think back to California. I mean, you have broccoli, cauliflower, grapes. I think you're the one, Michael, and I've started passing out. I guess that was one-fifth. Of the American produce came from that valley, huh?
Oh, I think at least that much. I think at least that much.
Yeah.
And now it's going fallow. And
they should start looking at aquaponic and hydroponic growing. I've been investigating that in Texas. There are some farms they're huge and produce way more than they used to on a fraction of the land using a fraction of the water. And I was looking at one farm he produces, and they produce 365 days a year. So he on, I think he was saying like 25 acres, he was producing as much as what he used to produce on 100 acres, and they don't use the water. They don't. The water is recycled.
So well, because that was a huge investigation by the EPA. When those guys originally started, I mean, the EPA, you know, any time that something becomes functional as an agency that is fully bought into the global agenda, one of the things that they went out and did, and that's why the recycling process really eliminated any hope the EPA had of shutting them down, because
right.
they wanted to use the Clean Water Act to be able to do that, and
that's
it's just like fracturing in the energy industry. You know, they will battle and they will continue until there's no proof. There was no evidence that they could offer, so they couldn't shut those guys down. And it is a viable way to do it. You know, South Korea has bought into and is fully functioning under United Nations Agenda 21. It's not very pretty, I felt sad to be there. And witness, here it is in its full-blown glory, what America could become, and I was saddened by it. But one of the things that they're doing to mass-produce and to be able to feed themselves is hydroponics, and they're using it all over South Korea because it takes up a smaller footprint.
Well, you know, that may be fine. Let the market be the judge of that. But in the meantime,
yes.
we ought not be taking the productive land out of the hands of the productive citizen and put it
there
into either public-private
exactly.
partnership or into government ownership. I mean, both those options
yes.
are unacceptable,
now,
and that's where the real battle has to be fought.
And the
yeah.
battle
and,
should be fought, and it should be fought using the Constitution, that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about. That's what I'm working on in my county and in my district and why I'm running for office, because that's what I want to use in our county. Because I believe, as John and I have been talking for quite some time, it's getting cold. It's going to start getting very cold. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on states in the South and the southern part of America, because right now, the crop failure is enormous. Frank just came home and he drove through Alabama and Florida, and he said all he saw is rows and rows and rows of rotten corn. And that was from all that rain. So
yeah.
I've been talking to the farmers in our area and to some of the ag people, and I'm going to start investigating how to do aquaponic and hydroponic and vertical growing here and begin to revitalize the community. And I think we'll use the Restore Act.
Well, you discussed earlier today that plan, and
right.
you know, that makes sense, but it's not fighting the curse that's being put on our land. And on our person.
No, that's just a tool. That's the survival tool. Then
everybody needs a survival tool.
That's right. That's the survival
tool. Yeah, because, you know, the underlying deal, Karen, is that our family farmers are being bankrupted by design.
Well,
When it's not through finance, then it's through regulatory Clean Water Act issues for swine farmers.
In these areas, though, John, that's what in your area also, this would stop that. Because right now, I'm hoping, you were in the area of all the water, and were you declared an emergency? Because we just were. Okay,
yeah.
That opens up SBA loans. I've got my people, us guys, we're not taking grants, but we will take Restore Act money and we will take SBA loans. And
uh-huh.
we're going to use that, and I'm working with some people here, and we're going to start investigating doing aquaponic and hydroponic growing on a massive scale.
Well, it may function. Yeah, I mean, anything is a solution as long as
now, don't you have
guys an ownership of the property.
Don't you have Restore
Act
money in Louisiana?
That's what I've witnessed in my area, is how many of these farmers have been driven from their property and have lost ownership.
Well, what about the ones that are left?
Oh, I know. You're right.
Well, we're moving to the point where the farmers who are left are the farmers who will go along with the new system. farmers who are willing to become or who are public-private partners. And, of course, my message for those guys is, you think you're going to sit at this table for very long? No, because the system is one that consolidates itself and all power unto itself, and they don't need that many guys at the seat of the table.
No.
And if you think you think you're a cute guy and you're at the table, just don't hold your breath too long, because you're going to be off that table in due course.
Right. I usually say at that point, and by the way, have you read any of the history of Adolf Hitler? Who was the first group of people that he killed?
Yes,
he executed. They were his frontline people, because they knew too much.
That's right.
Like you.
Yeah.
Well, that is more than a symbolism, because I think that's the path that we are on. But let me go back to this ICLEI organization, because I think this is what gives us a real chance to shoot, an opening salvo across the bow into the laps of the globalists. Because, you got to figure that evil always does some stupid things.
Right.
And the stupid thing that I think they've undertaken in America is the launching of this organization called the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives has contracts with 600 cities, and it is a partner with virtually every cog in the United States. So when the One Bay Area plan comes along, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but this plan is $250 billion of federal funds coming into the San Francisco Bay Area to totally reshape the Bay Area, in accordance with globalist objectives in regard to smart growth. So if we can understand how ICLEI is working with the COGS, how ICLEI works with your city, who ICLEI is, and what the Constitution prohibits, we have a door that begins to open up for everybody in this country to start going right after the crux. And the crux I'll define today as the localization of existing Agenda 21 policy in the United States. If we don't beat it locally, we're doomed. Our children and our children's children and posterity will forever, in all likelihood, be committed to a system where their person is controlled by a man-created world government that sees human beings in no difference than they would see any other species.
Yeah.
And so we take two steps with where we're broaching right now. One step is to disregard the American experiment and to let it go into the dustbin of history. That's bad enough.
Bad idea.
But the second thing is the institution of world government that has no concept of natural law. We need to talk about that a little bit.
No
concept of natural law, the foundation upon which America was built, and the only reason why spiritual people and people who don't believe in any supernatural power, we've all benefited from the fact that America was founded on the idea that there is a law that is higher than any law man can make.
Mm-hmm.
And John Locke described it as the natural law. And Thomas Aquinas did a lot of work on this too. This is the great advance of Western civilization through the Dark Ages and into the Renaissance, and finally fully blossomed with the establishment of the American structure. Today we're on the verge of losing that, as our law schools pay no attention to natural law. Our courts have no idea what natural law is. In fact, most judges in America today say they're advocates of a civil law called social justice, meaning that man determines what's justice, what's just for each group of people that it encounters.
Right.
So we no longer have a system of equal justice where the law is applied the same to every person. Instead, we have social justice, which means, if you're one of our favorite people, this is how the law applies to you. And if you're not one of our favorite people, well, the law applies this way to you. And that's the system of law that has been adopted by from the American Bar Association to to every legal operation in America today. We are losing our heritage in natural law, and as we lose that, all people, spiritual people, atheistic people, will lose their individuality and the legal recognition that they operate free and independent of a totalitarian government. That's what holds the American government to its chains, and that's the linkage that has been lost in our country, and it's going to be lost to humanity if we don't work hard to restore it in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
That's why we have
very
to fight
short.
Agenda 21 at the local level.
Yep, very sure.
And we can do it. Now, when you start by understanding ICLEI, and if you go to our website, freedomadvocates.org, put ICLEI into the search center, you'll get enough about ICLEI. You'll see some of our PowerPoints on ICLEI. You get enough about ICLEI to know what you're dealing with and why it is that ICLEI membership from your city constitutes a clear and obvious breach of Article 1, Section 10, which prohibits any local government, including state governments and cities and counties, from engaging in any arrangements with foreign political powers. Any treaty alliance or I forgot the third term, but it's exactly what these contracts with ICLEI are. They're making alliances with a foreign-based political entity that seeks the remake of America. Now, if your city council person is allowing your planning staff to have its policies coordinated by the ICLEI organization, and your city councilman is doing nothing about that, well, your city councilman needs to be delivered the law. Because the law is very clear. It's a law that's relatively never used in the history of the Republic. But today, it was written for a time like today, because today we need to remind our local officials who are in bed with ICLEI that they're breaching direct directions coming from the U.S. Constitution. You say, well, how do you do that? Because here we've got a real action program that we can undertake to at least make our elected officials know that we know that what they're doing is treasonous. I don't use that word lightly. It is treasonous for your city council to allow contracts with ICLEI to be entered into by your city or county. So once we know that, there's a process under virtually, I think every state has what's called a misprision of treason. Now, misprision is a notion that people in positions of power or control are responsible for what happens under their watch. So a typical city council person is going to say, when you walk up to them at a public meeting and you say, you're involved with this ICLEI organization and it's treasonous under Article 1, Section 10, and what do you have to say for yourself? And the city councilman will say, oh, ICLEI, I don't think I've ever heard of that. Maybe I have, but I don't remember what it does. Okay. Well, that's when your job begins, because your job under state statutes says that you can tell responsible parties, you can tell your board of supervisors, your city council people, your county council, your local judges, your planning director for that matter, you can tell them that under their watch, the Agenda 21 portfolio is being carried out through the activities of this ICLEI organization, and that the city's contract with ICLEI therefore violates Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, and they need to do something about that. You go, wow, that feels good. We're taking an offense. But you wake up the next morning, you go, well, okay, we just did that yesterday. And you know what? Those guys didn't pay any attention to us.
Right, nothing changed.
And you know what? Nothing's going to happen because I did that. Well, I say that may be what it appears, but here's how I analyze that circumstance. Once you have made on the record a notice of misprision of treason under your state statute, we have the California statute on our website, and all states have similar statutes that you can find. The term misprision of treason is one you can Google and find definitions of, etc. But once you've issued a misprision of treason to Councilman Jones, he has to go to bed each night and think. You know, let's assume Councilman Jones knows what ICLEI is. He goes to bed each night and says, oh, man, they put on the record that I'm complicit in this. He says, well, so long as this globalist win, I don't have anything to worry about. But if us globalists lose this battle, they're going to throw my ass in jail for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Do I really want to advance this program? Because now my skin's in the game. And I'm going to tell you that these people are largely cowards. And if they know they've got something to risk, some of them are going to roll. And those who are willing to put that at risk, I say, fine, we'll come back for you 10 years from now when we've won this battle and we look for who was responsible. And we found this old misprision of treason notice on the public record, and you're going to have to answer to it because we now have a sheriff and a district attorney who are going to file against you. And so that's our objective, is just to make sure they have some skin in the game, that they become accountable for their actions, and that ultimately they simply pay the price.
Well, I think that is an excellent idea. The only problem that I see with it is that most people have no idea what Article 1, Section 10 is, and they don't even know what the Constitution is. So how many people do you need to present this? Only one.
Only one. You know, it may help to bring the you know, those forces in your community that are aware of Agenda 21 to the table. Clearly, once you file it, you want to make sure over time that everybody knows about it.
Right.
Because it's a way to raise the issue.
Idea.
You know, Councilman Jones has been doing these things. He's been warned, and he's still doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, can I have a question from Michael Shaw, if I may?
Sure.
Go ahead.
This is McNeil.
Okay, I'm in Florida, and our county here is under a 2060 vision plan. Neither our council or our board of commissioners belong to ICLEI. But at the same time, the developers, the planners that were hired to do this, they work with ICLEI, and on their board sits a woman that also sits on the board of ICLEI. So this would definitely apply to that portion of it, correct?
Well, these questions become tougher because I think ideally, you know, let's face it, foreign political powers can come into our society and they can take the microphone and they can preach and they can get, you know, they can get supporters and followers, and, you know, we can't say that under the American system that they've breached the misprision of treason statute. It is when the policies get into government and they were brought to government through the ICLEI organization, we have an easy shot at knocking those policies out. If you've got a county who has no association with ICLEI, which I think is impossible because your COG in all likelihood has an association with ICLEI, and so it may be, you know, it's a little trickier here because as a COG, a federal organization or a state organization, they talk out of both sides of their mouth when answering that. But if you took the position that the COG was a state organization and the COG is working with ICLEI, like AMBAG, the Association of Bay Area Governments in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know, it is ICLEI that runs the COG. And so
the League of Cities and the League of Mayors and all of those leagues.
All of those leagues are active NGO operations.
Right.
All those associations are globalist in nature, but they're at least domestic. So you're unable to characterize their involvement as an act of treason until or unless you associate them with ICLEI.
Yeah. You have
okay,
to make
well,
the
they
tie
are all
that they've entered into some type of an alliance, huh?
With
a foreign
that's
entity.
Right.
Okay,
yeah,
here's
that's
one
right.
then. What about the we belong with the National Association of Counties, as many counties throughout the nation does, and they are in partnership and work with ICLEI.
I think that that you might want to misprision people in the National Association of Counties because they are not a federal government operation. At least I'd argue, if they're a federal government operation and they're coordinating with foreigners, you know, that under Article 1, Section 10 is hard to prevent because under Article 1, Section 8, you know, the federal government can engage in foreign policy and can contract with and coordinate with, largely those foreign operations that they choose to do that with. So the prohibition is against local government doing it. Now, the National Association of Counties is, my guess, it's not a federal government operation. It's an association of county governments.
I think it's an NGO.
Well, everybody's
well,
an
I mean,
NGO.
You'd have to investigate that, but if you find their alliance, and the one thing that's true of that association is I believe that these counties that are members are taking tax dollars and paying fees. If you can link those fees in any kind of manner, well, then you would have absolute right under Article 1, Section 10.
Yeah,
you know,
would they take
they,
our
they can't
county?
Enter into that.
They take our county tax dollar, and then on
yes.
top of that, they also belong in all the states, if they belong to them. In the states also is the Florida Association of Counties, which is a
mm-hmm.
chapter to them.
Yes.
And
so
they also take our tax dollar, and they even take our tax dollar to lobby.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think
well,
you may be
like
able to build a
the
case there, but I think you got to be careful of the federal state differential when dealing
yeah.
with foreign entities, and so what your effort in going after the National Association of Counties is to be able to establish them as a state function, or at least not a federal function, and if you do so, then I think that it may be appropriate to misprision the leadership of the National Association of Counties such that they are made responsible and accountable for their affiliation with the ICLEI organization.
Yeah, because, see, we don't belong to ICLEI, so that I can't go to my board and try to stop this in any manner that way, and that's what I was hoping for.
Okay, you might want to continue your investigation. For cities who say they are not associated with ICLEI, let me just say that there are all kinds of little sneaky ways that cities gain the association with ICLEI without an obvious paper trail. In my county, Santa Cruz, the city of Santa Cruz was an original member of ICLEI, and the county has been in and out doing ICLEI policies all along, in and out, and now they claim, well, we're no longer members of ICLEI. Well, what they did is they went through an NGO over in Silicon Valley, called Joint Venture Silicon Valley, and they signed a contract with Joint Venture Silicon Valley for the express purpose of advancing the ICLEI operations in Santa Cruz County. So while Santa Cruz was able to say, we're no longer on the ICLEI list, it's simply a lie because they've got little clever ways to accomplish the same thing because they all want the leadership from the world order forces in order to be a qualified outpost of the world order. And so they oftentimes figure out sneaky ways to associate with ICLEI. And again, I'll say, look at your COG, because it's 95% sure that your COG is involved with ICLEI.
Okay, when you say COG, how are you spelling that? What is that?
COG is a Council of Government. And it is an association. You know, for instance, in where I live, Santa Cruz, we have our COG is called AMBAG, the the Association of Monterey Bay Area Governments. It covers three counties. Up north of us is ABAG, the Association of Bay Area Governments. That includes nine counties, 7.5 million people, and that's the one that's gotten $250 billion to remake the San Francisco Bay Area, including closing the main artery from San Jose to San Francisco to private automobiles. All stack and pack, walkable and bicycle lanes, where they intend to put all the people into what they call priority. All the new residents of the San Francisco Bay Area are to go into priority development areas, where they're looking, you know, the Sierra Club says it ought to be 500 residences per acre, but they're coming up with massive, intense style development all along the corridors that surround the Bay Area. And, you know, this is a rollout for what's going to happen everywhere. Next in line is Los Angeles. And as I said in our last interview, the third program in California is to, through the COG, to bind San Diego with Tijuana in a transnational region. Mm-hmm. All of this comes down to the creation of regions.
And in Florida, they're going to bind Miami to Cuba.
Yeah.
Could I ask one real quick question on the federal side there? This is Sally. In Florida, we have like 26 MPOs, Metropolitan Planning Organizations, and if I'm not mistaken, those are all federal.
Yes. Metropolitan Planning Organizations are COGs. Okay. That is,
so if
that
I want
is
to
the
look
Sovietization
up COGs,
of America. Pardon?
Yeah. If I want to look up COGs, sir, being in Taylor County, would I like start a research with Taylor County Council of COGS? Is that how I would start? I don't even know where to start.
Taylor County Council of Governments. Or Council of Governments, Taylor County. And you'll
County,
get there.
What you're going to look for, Neil, is any where do your councilmen go to get trained? They have to belong to some organization that trains them and tells them what to do. And
it's NACO
planner,
and
where
FAC.
Where does he get trained?
But it's NACO and FAC. That's where they all go get their training.
So then
NACO,
the Florida Association of Counties, is the COG.
Well, NACO is, NARCO is the way I've always pronounced it, is the National Association of Regional Governments. And, you know, they are the papa to MPOs or COGs and the papa to regional transportation commissions. These are the two federalized, regionalized, Soviet styles of government. NACO, you know, NARCO is a key element in this restructure of America. Nobody knows about that organization, but certainly through that organization, you can find out who your council of government is.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Michael, the last time you were on, didn't you guys have a vote out there in California that was going to allow regional, regional government to go forward? How did that vote go?
Well, let me clarify that. The COG came out and has had a year and a half of putting on seances in each county. They expected nobody to show up, and every time the house was packed with our people. Opposed to the ABAG One Bay Area plan that's going to cost American taxpayers $250 billion. Now, that's just the starting point. That's just the starting point, because then the banks get involved, you know, and the numbers become enormous. Yeah. I mean, all I can do is guarantee that as this begins taking over the country at the level of the ABAG proposal, that, you know, the dollar will become wallpaper.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, it already is. Let me ask you, Michael, did it
pass?
You're
going to be given a card with a chip, and if you're a good boy or girl, they'll load it up with all of the goodies that you want, and if you're not, they'll take them away.
Yeah.
Well, I think so. Well, here's what happened. A week after that radio show, they had their final meeting, where they were to determine one of three or four courses of action. We all know, and I think I said on that radio show, the plan was going to be adopted. Well, there was a huge crowd there in opposition, huge crowd. Nobody shows up in support. Let's face it, the only people who support this, the only people who know about it, are the bureaucrats themselves, and the bureaucrats are too chicken to show up at an event like this and express even their support. And so it was all the people against it, and the 100-person COG board made up of mostly elected officials who took a voice vote themselves. I mean, nothing goes to the public on this. A voice vote, not a recorded vote, and it passed overwhelmingly.
Wow.
So the ABAG proposal, the One Bay Area Plan, is now being funded in accordance with the Sustainable Community Strategy of the federal government and the strategy that has been enacted in the course of four statewide legislative maneuvers. All when you put those bills together, you end up with the Agenda 21 protocol for California, all based on global warming, all based upon ICLEI influences. And so we are now doomed and set. Now, two lawsuits have been filed. A third one will be filed. And I ought to spend a few minutes on that. The first lawsuit filed was filed by the Pacific Legal Foundation on behalf of some people that I know of here in the Bay Area. And for people who know the Pacific Legal Foundation, which has an office in Florida, they might be encouraged.
Right.
I've worked with Pacific Legal Foundation myself in the past. My former lawyer was the founder of the Pacific Legal Foundation. But let me tell you how the dialectic works, because this is a perfect example. This is the right-wing contribution to One Bay Area. And I say, contribution, what do you mean? I say, well, the way world government is coming down upon us is through a system of synthesis between the left and the right.
Yep.
Yes.
And what the right is doing in this case is that it is arguing against One Bay Area, not on the basis of principle, not on the basis of constitutional standards, but they are doing it on the basis that the One Bay Area program violates the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA. Well, let me tell you where that leaves the globalists. Now they've got to fight a bill, fight some litigation that relies on their bill, okay?
Yeah.
And so let's assume PLF is right. They're violating their own law. Well, all they have to do
is change the law.
And that is exactly what's going to happen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, another lawsuit was filed by the Building Industries Association. You'd think, oh, they must be good guys.
No.
No, because globalists have taken control of most all these organizations. They've got the money to do it, and they've done it. So what does the BIA want to sue over the One Bay Area program for? Well, it's this. They say that the smart growth housing under the One Bay Area isn't dense enough. So now we have the perfect... We have the perfect play of the dialectic. We got the right and the left, both engineering a response that allows the synthesis to occur, and that synthesis is the success, the legal success, of the One Bay Area program. Now, there is a third lawsuit that's going to be filed, and I'd like to tell your listeners about that because they can help us.
Okay.
It's Freedom Advocates and... the Post-Sustainability Institute, headed up by Rosa Corey.
Our listeners, please. This is the Democrats against UNAgenda21.org or .com.
I'm not sure. And so anyway, we and Rosa are working to bring a real lawsuit on the substantive issues of the One Bay Area Plan before the courts. Now, I have very little confidence in the court system, but it is an avenue that we have to take, and I think this is an easy enough legal proposition that the courts are going to have a hard time sidestepping it and allowing us just to fall into the dialectic. Our lawsuit is going to be focused on the idea that regionalism is unconstitutional, that regionalism mm-hmm. is not provided for in the U.S. Constitution, and that it is the concept of regionalism itself that must be abandoned by the state of California. Our hope, our push, will be to get the courts to say the COGS have no power.
Yeah.
Go to
right.
the root of the problem. Get rid of
well,
the regionalism,
to,
because if you do anything else, the weed just grows back.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they'll rename it.
So we're in a process. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and the other process is the money. We have to get people, both in our state and, I know the feds are off a cliff, but if you can get a small group of them, you have to get the people not to take the money.
Well, if we can get the courts to say that the regionalist system of federal distribution is unconstitutional, we
right.
set the globalists back at least a decade. We don't knock
yeah.
them out, but we knock them on the ground in respect to what it is we're talking about tonight,
right.
which is the local implementation of the globalist plan. Because
yeah.
without the COGS, and with the American spirit beginning to rise up, if the COGS were knocked down, whoo-hoo, we would buy ourselves
yeah,
a whole new lease on life with lots of time to be able to do something. And so
yeah.
and so my call to people interested in the survival of America or the reconstitution of America is to help us. You can go to Freedom Advocates
mm-hmm.
and make a contribution to the legal fund. We used to be able to say that that'd be a tax-deductible contribution. The IRS this year, just as we launched this program, took away our 501c3 status without reason or word.
Oh, we
imagine
are not surprised.
That.
We are
yeah.
sorry, but not surprised.
Yeah. And so we're just saying now, well, we can't provide you a tax deduction for contributions to this legal effort, but that doesn't change the need for having this
mm-hmm.
legal effort take place, because if we can block it here in the Bay Area, your
right.
750 plan is dead.
It's dead, that's right.
Yeah.
We need
so
to
rather than let it happen here and let it grow there, help us kill it here, and that will be the precedent that can be used to kill it everywhere.
Right. Right.
Now, for anybody
who wants to
help with that, they can go to our website, make checks payable to Freedom Advocates Legal Fund, and that money will go to the filing of the complaint, which needs to be filed in the next 60 days or so, and then there will be 3 lawsuits filed against the ABAG proposal. One of those lawsuits will be meaningful and will represent real opportunity and even some real advance, even in the event we don't win the litigation at this stage. Although I don't know how we don't win it, I will say something about
our
counsel.
Through corruption, you won't win it.
Well, through corruption, we may not win it.
Win it.
but let me, I'm not one who speaks frequently or well about the nature of the court system in America these days, but I do have a good story, and it involves the lawyer that will be handling our regionalist objection to the One Bay Area program, and that is a man named Tim Kasuni, who practices out of Sacramento, did at one time work for the Pacific Legal Foundation, and has been my counsel for the last number of years. And just last week, we got notice. Yes,
I hate to cut you off, that we are running out of time.
Oh,
and
my,
maybe
it goes
you
so
can
fast.
Come back next Tuesday and just give us this piece of information so that we can conclude properly. And
well,
I will
and,
also
and,
put it out
and
on
Mike,
the website.
Don't we have when is the time slot for the show that I'll be doing, Karen? What's that date?
That's the 10th.
Maybe 10th. Michael, because I'll tell you, we need to focus on what you're doing. You're bringing great information. I'd like to get you back maybe for 30 minutes on the 10th, and we can go back into some of this.
Well, the
10th
would work. I try to keep my radio appearances to the second week of the month, just so that my brain isn't forever clouded.
Okay, I got you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but
we'll
the
make that
the
arrangement,
work.
But right now we
we'll
are going to have to say goodbye. We have no choice. It is the end of a wonderful show. Thank you all for joining us. We will
bring Michael
back. This is so important, folks. There's so many things to talk about. It's not just, it's not over now. But you're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and RedStateTalkRadio.com. This is your host, Karen Schoen, and John Estabrooks. Good night,
John. Yeah, we
still
got a couple minutes, Karen, and I guess to wrap things up, you know, this is real. There, Michael and the folks in California have lived with it for a lot longer than many of us. They are giving us a torch, a solution, and we've got to make this available to ourselves and assist them, because just like you said, rather than all of us fighting it on the 3,000 counties across the nation, if we can join their battle, because trust me, I mean, when he says he's got a great website and the number of hours that you can spend there researching this, and let's join that battle. Let's make our contributions. Yep. If we could get every patriot movement, every Tea Party needs to hear about this.
I think
this.
We'll get it out in the newspaper. Well, that'll be one of the things that we'll put in the newspaper as well, Neil, if you'll remind me.
Oh, yes.
okay, and this is, Michael, we can't thank you enough, and we know you're
in
a heavy battle. And you're the soldier in the front lines, and we're going to support you. So we will make sure that everybody all around, as far as our reach goes, knows what's going on. And thank you again for joining us. And
God bless America, folks.
God bless America.
Yes.
And
get Michael back soon.
Everybody. Yes. Thank you for joining us this evening. God bless you all. God bless America. And remember, victory is our only option, and it's in our hands, and we can do it. Good night, and have a wonderful week. See you again next week.